We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get all of our news and analysis. We got a story up there right now. Breaking down the Saints draft prototypes. Last year, we nailed three of the first three picks doing that. So we ran the same process. Chances are, whoever the Saints are drafting, we found them in that article. Make sure you go check it out. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. That's NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. All right, welcome back to another episode of NewOrleans.football presented by PJ's Coffee. We're at our new studio right next door to Map Hours on Veteran Memorial Boulevard. If you need a new car, make sure you go check him out. He has 12 dealerships all over the region. Any type of car you want, he will take care of you, get you the best price, the best customer care, the best car buying experience. That's my guy. Make sure you go check him out. All right, we got a great show for you guys today. We're going to talk about the best case scenarios in the draft. If one thing could happen, what would we want it to be? We're going to talk about that and so much more. But we'll be right back after this quick word from our great sponsors. The NewOrleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hat Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Welcome back. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers has a great engagement salon, so if you are looking to pop the question, make sure you go by, talk to my guy Ken. He'll get you a beautiful ring at the price point that you can afford, and you will have no regrets about your experience there. Make sure you check them out today. They're on Maple Street. And while you're there, make sure you check out their Florida Lead necklace and earring that you see on the screen right now. The necklace is $1,350 and the earrings are $1,100. Make sure you tell them that NOF sent you. All right, we're about to kick off one of our favorite annual exercises here at NewOrleans.football with our first mock draft simulation on Thursday morning.
You were the original.
The original? Yeah. All right, yeah. Yeah, I'll take that. The original mock draft simulation.
There's a lot of them out there, but this is the real one.
Yeah, we go out there, we play like we're in the war room, we run a simulation, we go back and forth, we try to come to a consensus. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't, but we come to a unified front on what we're going to do with that. That comes out Thursday. Make sure you sign up for the site. Use the code NOF, 20% off your first payment. But let's talk about some of the stuff right now, because some of these scenarios aren't going to play out. We went through our simulation. A lot of these names we're about to talk about, they were already gone or weren't available. But If we had to go through one of these, and we're going to go through five of them here.
Yeah.
If we had to go through them,
these are the two good to be true options. I consider all five of these options like we can't believe it fell that way, and we really mean it. You know, not just hey, this is exactly what we wanted. These are five truly exactly what we wanted. What I want to know is what consensus we reach on. What is the top choice? Like if we're sitting there in the draft room saying this is the absolute best case scenario, and we're going to start with Olu Fashanu. He's a Penn State left tackle. This is obviously the Saints' number one need. We all agree on that. We just did a show Monday where we said what can make or break the Saints' season, and we picked the offensive line as the number one thing. And this guy is just a stud. I mean, there are Teron Armstead comparisons out there. He's a true left tackle. Not everybody is. And a lot of people are mocking him to the Saints right now, but I think those are people who are just trying to find a spot for him. I feel like it would be a too good to be true if he actually falls to 14, but that's a run the card to the podium scenario, right?
I think that the mock drafts are wrong about the order that these guys are going to go. I don't agree with how they have them. When you watch them, it's a little confusing even. Yeah. that like Huaga is ahead of Olu. Like I don't buy that. I don't see it. I watched them today. I thought Olu, I think he's far and away a better prospect. And all of them, he's kind of following. It's like, well, we'll just throw him here after Latham. And like, I like him more than Latham.
And that
even,
didn't start happening until like 2 weeks ago. He used to go in the top 10 of like every mock I saw until about, I don't know, March 20th. It's nothing he did wrong at the combine or whatever. I think a couple more quarterbacks have moved up and they've like, oh, now where do we put Fashanu? But this guy is a bona fide top 10 prospect. I don't think anyone is more like, check every box then that we're going to talk about that could possibly fall to them. I mean, Joe Alt too, but I think it's even less likely that he falls.
Yeah, Joe Alt's he's definitely the number one. He's definitely the number one guy. Yeah, no question about it. I'm a little bit confused about how they have some of these guys, right? Like to me, it's all Olu, Latham, Huaga. Like I even like Guyton, I think, more than Huaga. Like yeah. I don't
kind of like Guyton too.
I don't know that Huaga is like your left tackle. He doesn't I don't see it necessarily, and I could definitely be wrong, but just watching him, it kind of felt like, why are we having the conversation in this order? And
yeah,
you know, I kind of like started asking questions. I don't know that the mock drafters see it the same as the league. Like I think the league might see it a little bit differently than how some of these mock drafts look. And then, you know, one of the things that happens with these things is that there's a lot of groupthink that kind of sets in too, and
especially among analysts.
Yes,
because teams share information with each other, and they share information with analysts. I am not mocking the people that do. The people that do this are incredible.
They are
at what they do. We're friends with a lot of them. Field Yates, Dane Brugler, so many other guys that are so good at this. But they do start to kind of be like, am I missing on something? Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL Network's one of the best. Like that guy started having that guy in his top 10. If I have him at 35, do I want to be out on that limb? That definitely takes over. It's very similar in like fantasy rankings too.
No doubt about it. And look, I think the greatest draft analyst of all time was probably Mike Mayock, and he went and ran a team. And we kinda, you know what I mean? So like, there's a level of information that kind of comes out. And then look, a lot of the consensus, like it's interesting how it forms. Like there's these services that kind of work for the entire league that the teams pay toward. And they kind of do like the initial ranking of everyone. And I think that sets the stage a lot of times. And I think people kind of get slotted. And then like, there's probably, look, there's a handful of teams that kind of see it a different way. And then like they go different and it's like, oh wow, they reached or they missed. And it's just like, no, that's just kind of how it looks. And I just think personally, when the draft happens, I just have a feeling that these guys are going to come off the board differently than how it looks right
now. I agree. I'd be pretty surprised if Fashanu is not the second offensive lineman out. Although we are hearing, and this is one thing the analysts seem to have right, maybe 8 to 10 offensive linemen overall in round one. What's interesting is if it's not Alt or Fashanu for the Saints, everyone else could potentially be a right tackle instead of a left tackle, a left guard instead of a left tackle, maybe be a left tackle. The good thing for the Saints is they have needs at all three of those positions, so they could draft any one of these guys and they'll find a home for them. All right, here's my second one. This is another one that I think a lot of people consider a run the card to the podium guy for the Saints, and that's Brock Bowers.
Hold up. Back up. Out of the five, where do you rank this in terms of like getting?
Well, we're going to go through them all.
I'm going to rank them as we go.
Yeah. Well, right now, I think Fashanu is obviously the one to beat. We haven't gotten to anyone else yet.
I got it second on the list, though. Like, this is two out of all the scenarios. Okay, this is two for me. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Brock Bowers. Does Brock Bowers pass up Olu Fashanu for you? He's the Georgia tight end who, I'd say maybe 30% chance he falls to the Saints at 14. He's obviously that big pass catcher. He's filling the tight end need that they have. I think they got to come away from this draft with a tight end. No one else would help their passing game as much as Brock Bowers, but they just need a body in there. They need a young player in that room. So this is another one that it's kind of a tough call between these two guys. How do you rank them?
So, yeah, look, it would be tough to pass him up. And if he's there, I think you kind of got to take him. The problem with this team is I don't know that you have the flexibility. And if you have the good tackle versus a tight end and they're both sitting there, I don't know that you can go with the tackle right now because we don't know the rest of their plan and they need two offensive tackles. So I think the tackle has to be ranked ahead of Bowers, yeah. But I think it would be incredibly hard. And I think this is one of those things where you're like, man, would they regret it if they pass up on someone like that? Because how often is it that there's a tight end that's worthy of a top 15 pick? There's one in Atlanta that hasn't quite worked out the way it has, but I can't remember. It's been a while. Like these guys don't come around too often. Yeah. Kind of a unicorn.
Getting a lot of George Kittle comparisons, yes. Like a lot of tight ends do, but his game in particular, and sure enough, the offensive coordinator just worked for George Kittle, so
yeah,
it's hard not to love the fit. The only thing the counter argument is, I'm picking Fashanu. I love Fashanu. I'm picking Fashanu almost regardless of need. I think he's an incredible player. We talked about this the other day. The offensive line just makes everything else go. These other guys can operate because you get your offensive line in order. I don't want to see their offensive line collapse. The counter argument, though, is if you take Brock Bowers in round one, you can take an offensive lineman in round two that can probably start for your team. If you don't take Bowers in round one, there's just no equivalent. The drop-off is drastic. You're just getting a guy if you don't take Brock
Absolutely.
Bowers.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's the thing. It's a unicorn almost.
But these guys do not exist above Bowers.
I think you have to. And I think it's just the way that their team's constructed right now. It's limiting, and I don't know that
How many tackles do we go before you're willing to let yourself take Bowers? What if Alton Fashanu are the only two tackles who are gone? Will you take Bowers then? Latham?
I don't love any of the other ones. Like I think you can wait till the second round on some of them. So I mean, if the top Bowers two are gone, I think you can still get one at 45 in another year. That guy would probably be the 20th pick. But there's, like you said, seven, eight, nine, ten of these guys that are just the value is still going to be good
because not everyone's going to, you know, people are going to take other things. All right. Well, along the same lines, then I have yet to see a mock where Rome Odunze, the Washington wide receiver, falls all the way to the Saints, but he's flirting with it now. Like I say, every time somebody puts JJ McCarthy up in their top 10 as a fourth quarterback, or some people are even putting five quarterbacks in their top 13, he is kind of the consensus third receiver. So there is potential, like sort of the Marshawn Lattimore draft, where there's just a surprise and somebody that everyone had in their top 5, 6, 7 falls. He's a guy who could fall. He could be that possession receiver. He could be that X receiver. He's not quite the Brock Bowers size guy, but obviously can fill that need as a pass catcher. Do you like him better than these two guys if he falls?
I've said it before, like all things being equal, I got to take the tight end ahead of the wide receiver. So I would take Bowers before him, I think, and I might end up regretting that down the line.
Right. Odunze might be the biggest star of the group, but...
There's just so much depth at wide receiver, though, too, so... I don't know. I mean, I think if I had to, I would probably go Bowers before him. I just think that in this offense and with what they already have, I think the tight end just changes everything so much more. So I got this one ranked behind the other ones right now, but it's close. Like, I think all these things are kind of paired together. And if you have any one of these three scenarios hit, I think you're kind of happy.
Yeah, these are all... We're wasting a lot of breath because these guys, everyone's going to be like, Nick and Mike got me so excited for all these guys. And then they're going to go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 in the draft. But it could happen. I agree with you. The tiebreaker for me is that I think of these three, a good wide receiver, not a great wide receiver, but a good wide receiver is the easiest thing to find. A second round receiver, a fourth round receiver, and they already have some pretty good receivers on the roster right now. There's just those two other ones are more unicorns to me, that stud left tackle and certainly that stud tight end. So I have the same thing, Fashanu, Bowers, Odunze right now. But now we have somebody, I don't know if this is your number one, there's two scenarios left. Dallas Turner, the Alabama defensive end. Look, is arguably the Saints' second biggest need, the pass rush, the defensive line. This guy's a total stud, probably the highest ranked player of any of these guys. But I have yet, I mean, speaking of groupthink, I have yet to see anyone that has not put him with the Atlanta Falcons with the eighth pick. So if somehow Atlanta goes a different direction, does Dallas Turner become your top choice of all these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Best defensive player in the draft, no doubt about it. I think he's the guy that the Saints want. I think he's look, there's just no way he's just not going to be there. So I think that kind of changes plans and everything. That's why you go and get Chase Young. I mean, there's just no way to address it. And I think the drop off between him and the next guy is pretty significant.
There's Leatu Latu. There's Jared Verse.
Yeah.
You would take everyone else ahead of Latu and Verse that we've talked about today?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For sure. Definitely would take them all before them. I think they're good players. It's just these guys are bad. There's a couple wide receivers I would take before either one of those guys for sure. But yeah, I think Dallas Turner's got a chance to be special in the right system with the right idea. I think DA would find a way to kind of take advantage of everything he can do. It's just they're going to have to probably find a way to block him. So get Olu and stop Dallas Turner with him.
Turner's in my top two on this list, but I think I still like Fashanu the best. I like the idea. I mean, just
if they had tackles, would you put that way?
No, I think it's a tiebreaker for me. I think Fashanu and Turner might have the same grade for me. That's why. Like, I don't think I'm settling for the lesser player if I draft Olu Fashanu, but I know I'm filling an even bigger need. And defensive end is a huge need, but man, I'm just going to feel so much better about everything Saints related if I'm not as worried about their offensive line. I think Fashanu is a legit, I think every guy we've listed is a legit top 10 prospect in this draft.
Oh, yes.
And,
for sure.
And I'm okay with taking the left tackle who's in my top 10. I don't think I'm like settling if I do that. So, and here's the last one. Here, and we've talked about all these needs the Saints have. Howie Roseman wants to move up from 22, and he calls and he says, Mickey, this time I'm going to overpay. I know you've gotten me a few times on the trade value charts. This time I'm going to overpay for that 14th pick. I'm moving up to 22, and I'm giving you 53 in round two. 22 and 53 for that 14th pick. Do you take that over all these scenarios?
I'm going to tell Howie he needs to like throw in the seventh. Like they got to get like one of those.
A 2026 seventh.
Yeah. They got to get one of them picks back. Like one of those throw ins. Like you got to get, and I want my sevenths back. Like, you know, like hit them like draft day. Like you got to give something back there. But it even happens like in the Buffalo. Like there's spare change in that trade. It was just
I've been on this campaign. It's replaced get rid of the chains for me as my why does every trade. What charts are they going on? This is not a mandate. You do not have to trade your 2026 seventh for their 2025 sixth to even these things out. Just
like it's
stop
nuts.
I
don't understand why they do it. Like who can half those guys are probably sitting there like, damn, we gotta like pick 237. Like we gotta sit here till the
end.
Some
people are trying to probably get rid of seventh.
I know.
No. I hope the Saints do it this year. Oh, they got a lot of late picks.
They do. but yeah, look, it's tough for me. It's tough for me to go to this. I mean, I think some of their positions in need, if you move back, you can still get a good player. Like if you want a wide receiver, if you want an offensive tackle, you can get those by moving back. So this is a great draft to move back in if you want to. It's just always, it's so easy to say to move back
yes.
and assume that like they're going to get more picks and, you know, but the truth is you get a player you believe in more if you kind of pick where you're at.
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is here. It's right if it works. It's wrong if it doesn't. I covered a team for many years that traded back every single draft, and they drafted terribly.
And they didn't hit on those guys.
They drafted terribly.
Everybody said trade down because Bill Belichick does it, and then you go through, and he didn't hit on them. And you know what? I did this study once on that because I've covered the Saints for a long time, and everybody's do what Bill Belichick does. The one time that he nailed his first round pick was when he traded up for Chandler Jones.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. That's right. Yeah, look, it's easy to say it. And if you hit on him, it's brilliant. Yeah. And if you don't, you don't. I think the draft is super inexact, period. I think if you go through and look at anybody's history, like everybody's bad at drafting. Yeah. Nobody's really actually good at it. No philosophy. The only good philosophy is the one that works, and no one knows what's going to work. But again, if you're trying to play the odds here and pick up just assets and you're saying, okay, there are 10 first-round offensive tackles, 7 first-round offensive tackles. We're taking one of them no matter what, and the guy we can get at 14 isn't going to be that much different than the one at 22. Then I think you do it. But I think just trading back as a general philosophy isn't always
completely
the best idea. You need to have like an actual plan of action instead of just saying, we're going to just maximize the assets and hope for the best. In some ways, like I get the theory behind it because everybody's wrong about everything, but you have to believe in your scouting at some point. And I don't think the way the Saints have drafted is great, but at least like they believe in what they're doing to some extent. And I think you it's tough because they've been bad drafting early on, but you have better odds. Like, you have better odds of hitting if you really believe in the guy you're
taking.
Well,
I think this, what we're doing today, is the perfect, actually put yourself to the test if you believe in trading down. We're talking about this level of player. Like, yeah, trade down in theory, but what if Fashanu is there? What if Bowers is there? What if Odunze is there? What if Dallas Turner falls there? Oh, well, now I don't want to trade down because I love that guy. Well, sometimes the Saints might have their, like, number 6 overall graded player on the board at 14. That's when they don't trade down because they love a guy. Doesn't mean they're right, but if your number 6 overall favorite player in the entire draft is there at 14, you don't trade down. Like, maybe you're wrong to fall in love, but when you do, you don't trade down. I do like the idea of trading down in theory, though. I don't know if I like it better than these four guys, but if these four guys are gone, which we expect them to be, it might be my next favorite thing. Overtaking a J.C. Latham, overtaking a Brian Thomas, receiver from LSU, overtaking a Jared Verse. Maybe I can get Tyler Guyton, the offensive tackle at 22 that we both kind of like. Maybe Fautanu from Washington falls there. One of these offensive tackles is probably going to fall further than expected. And I can get them at 22 and now have 2 second-round picks. I've never cared more about second-round picks than I do with this current Saints roster that's kind of aging and has so many holes than I do right now. So these are my top 5. I'll say Fashanu, Turner. You say Turner, Fashanu, Bowers, Odunze, trade down. But I like him better than all the guys who might really be there at 14.
Yeah, I don't know if you can trade down and get Brian Thomas. 6'3", 4'3", might not last until the 20s. That's a freak. But yeah, look. I like having a reason why. You know, if you're taking someone, I like to have a reason why. I felt like a lot of times Belichick just had a reason. He didn't have a reason why. It was just, we're going back and we're going to get somebody. But half the time they were like targeting somebody. It was just someone that made no sense in that position anyhow. So their whole draft process was so weird to me.
If you really want to quote unquote win the draft, I mean, did the Patriots trade down before they took that guard Cole Strange that surprised everyone? Like, I get that. Like, the year the Saints took Peyton Turner. I get when people want to see, like, look, gamble a little bit. If you really like Peyton Turner, but everyone thinks he's going to go 40th, trade down to 35th and get him there. Like, I understand that, but sometimes it just takes one other team to like the guy, too. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it goes back to the very first point, though. Like, you don't know that Peyton Turner is going to be there at 40. Just because all the mocks say he's going to be there at 40, it doesn't mean. I remember right before that draft, the NFL Network had a report saying, like, there were the surprise guy the first round is going to probably be Peyton Turner. Many teams like him, da da da. Like, I think that he had some. I don't know. I'm not defending the pick. I just don't know if that was the guy, if you can always be like, trade back and get him. Because a lot of times, I think people are wrong about how they have these players ranked. And then I hate how it dictates the conversation, though, because going to the Mayock point, like, Mayock's thing, like, kind of set the tone, but then he's actually drafted and it didn't work. Like, so his...
This is one of my favorite points I've ever made. If Jeff Ireland retired from the Saints tomorrow and joined NOF as our scouting analyst, Jeff Ireland's big board would be gospel. Like, everyone would trust that over Daniel Jeremiah's big board and you know, Mel Kiper's big board, and all of them, they would be like, Jeff Ireland, of course, he's going to have the best. But because he works for a team, he's an idiot. That's not what Mel Kiper said.
Yeah, it's crazy. Draft season, it's here. We're going to be covering all of it. Mock draft tomorrow. Make sure you sign up to the site and check that out. We'll have that up sometime tomorrow, probably in the afternoon. All right. Now it is time for our money segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. The Saints are about $10 million under the salary cap right now. They'll get a very small amount of space back when Mike Thomas and Jameis Winston come off the books on June 2nd. Plenty of money to sign their draft class. It shouldn't be too cost prohibitive.
As it is right now, they only need about $2 million in space.
One of those guys replaced somebody that's already on the roster. So, yeah, it doesn't cost that much to sign all these guys. But they could do a couple other things. They could rework Taysom Hill's contract, Alvin Kamara's contract, and do all that stuff to kind of free up a little bit more money. But should they spend it? Should they still add a couple of veterans that may only cost a couple million bucks? Mekhi Becton, Andres Pete, Hunter Renfrow, Tyler Boyd, run stuffing nose tackle, or should they stand pat? What are you doing?
This is why people don't put me in charge. Like, I'm just like the Saints. I'm like, gosh, I have the space. Could add Mekhi Becton and Tyler Boyd, you know, like, why not do it and go try to win 10 games instead of 8 this year or whatever. But I kind of want to see them keep showing this discipline. I kind of would love to see them carry over all $10 million and not touch Kamara's contract and not touch Hill's contract for two reasons. Easier for me to say, since I'm not as invested as they are, I kind of want to watch the Saints save money this year and then still try to be competitive. Hey, surprise, surprise. We were Vegas had us at 7.5 and we won 10. Like, that'd be a good year. I'd catch up on the cap and make a surprise run with lower expectations. That's what I want to see. If I'm running this team, man, it's hard not to want to add Mekhi Becton and Tyler Boyd.
I think they'll probably spend a little bit, and I think they should. I mean, I think you have to spend a little bit at tackle. If there's a vet that you can add and you can just – and it's not – like, it's a certain point, it's about player safety, too, and just doing what's best for Derek Carr and making sure he doesn't get hurt and making sure that you can run the ball and you're blocking and nobody's, you know, in peril ever. And I think if you're not going to spend on the backup quarterback, you need to spend on the tackle to make sure that you don't have to get to your backup quarterback. So
you should write that down.
Yeah. One way or another. Like, I think you have to spend a little bit, but I don't think any of these guys are going to cost major money. I think you can get any one of them on a similar deal to like what they've been doing with, you know, the receiver, or whoever else, like a few million bucks, 1 year deal, bring them in, let them run out there and take off. But I agree with you. I would love it if they can go in the season and not touch Alvin and not touch Taysom. Because, look, I mean, they can do stuff and they can get rid of them if they don't want, but it's just cleaner. It's cleaner. And if the idea is to have a cleaner cap, like, make cleaner moves. So I would like someday to just be able to look at the attached money to somebody and just do the accounting that way instead of, like, well, you can manipulate this, this, and this. And I think that's where they want to exist, too. So if that's the goal, just do it. Like, just try to get there without touching it. And if the clock's winding down on these guys, make it even easier to walk away or let their contracts, you know, just do what they do and negotiate from a different place if you want to extend it. But I think it's just better to kind of just let it go to the end and then revisit it at that point. And I want to see them do that more often.
Yeah. Feels like at this point, they'll probably wait till after the draft, see what they didn't get. And maybe if they just add one more guy, that'd be a nice compromise. Like, maybe if they get another pass catcher, they don't have to mess around with Hunter Renfrow, Tyler Boyd, anyone of that level. If they double dip on offensive tackles, maybe they don't sign. But maybe sign the one guy you don't, one spot you don't fill.
Do we know, you can look this up, and I'll yap while you look it up. Do we know exactly what they get for Alvin or Mike and Janus?
It comes out to about one total $1 million. They save 1.2 on each of them. The minimum salary that they agreed to will go off the books. None. But then it gets replaced by a guy who's making like $750. So it comes out to about $1 million they'll save. And then draft picks will cost about $2 million unless they trade down and add another second or third or fourth rounder. So there'll be about $9 million under the cap if they don't do anything else.
Yeah, I need to go back and look and see what they typically have as like their operating balance for
during the season. They do need an operating balance.
Yeah, because people are going to get hurt. You're going to sign people. Stuff
sometimes
like that.
You cut some guys that make some money too, and that adds to it too.
Yeah, so if they could go in, I mean, if you can sign a few of these guys and have $5-7 million, and I don't know, in case of emergency, break the glass on something. They might have to do one just to create enough room so you're not, like, in a weird situation in the season.
If they trade Marshawn Lattimore, then they have to maximize everything. But just to fit him this – Stephon Diggs' trade was interesting because it's almost identical to Marshawn Lattimore's. They just got to eat it. Now, it'll be off the books for the future, but they got to find a way to eat it in the short term.
I was surprised they took that. Would they say 31
million?
I'm surprised they took it all this season, but good for them that they could afford to do it.
They had to. I mean,
they could have waited until because it's a future.
But then the
pick.
Other team doesn't get the other team doesn't get him draft. Until June 2nd. Yeah. You can't fake the June. You can't do the this is a pseudo June 1st. You got to really the guy can't show up in Houston until June 2nd.
There were draft picks in this draft.
Yes.
Yeah, so they had to do it now. Yeah, okay. Yeah, kind of interesting. I thought the compensation's probably comparable. Like, if you could get a second for Marshawn, even if it's a year from now, and then it allowed you to do the June 2nd, like, I could see that working for them. But, you know, if you're doing it now, I think you got to pay a little more. I don't know. They always say, like, a pick a year from now is kind of like, like a three now is a two next year.
I mean, when you added all that up, it was barely the equivalent of a third-round pick. It was surprisingly low for me. I think that'd be a hard sell for Marshawn Lattimore. I think people would want more.
Vocally disgruntled player, I think, is one thing. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he does in that situation. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of those trades. You see it, and you're like, that's it? And then, like, you kind of start thinking about it. It's like, all right, it kind of makes some sense.
There's usually a big salary attached, only so many years left. I get it when that happens, but...
But to eat $31 million for a team that was a game away from the Super Bowl, like I don't necessarily know that I know what the Bills are doing right now. But if it was that bad, he had to get out of there. makes sense. Sometimes things are happening that we don't see, and that's one of them. But I don't think the Marshawn situation has ever gotten that bad to where they have to move him, and everybody's like, well, they have to move him. Like, I don't think it's there. It's not.
That would be the best case scenario for the Saints if they don't have to.
They don't have to, and I don't think they do have to. But we will certainly talk more about that in future episodes. But right now we're going to get back to the show right after this short commercial break. So check out this quick message from our sponsors and we will be right back.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Welcome back to our studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. It's now time for the Hard Hide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey segment. And I wanted to ask you about this. You had an interesting nugget in your last rundown on the website where you talked about Chris Olave focusing on getting stronger this year. And I guess maybe there's a no-duh element to that. It was the huge focus for him last year, and I thought we saw some of the results from it. But it's funny that it's something we're not talking about this year. And it makes me think, you know, how much further do you think he has to go? And for that matter, you went and spoke to Rashid Shaheed about 2 weeks ago about what he's working on this offseason. And let's throw A.T. Perry in there, too. These are the guys we feel best about. This is the position group we might feel best about on the Saints roster. But what specific steps do you want to see those three guys take this offseason?
Yeah, I think for Chris, he made enough progress on it to make it not a concern, but I don't think it became a strength. But he sure did make some contested catches last year. It wasn't something that was like an epidemic anymore. I think his first year, there were signs of it, and then it quickly went away, and it became a huge issue for him. But I thought last year he made a handful of those plays, so it took the edge off it. But I think it's something just that he wants to make a strength of his game, that he wants to be able to go up and kind of, you know, attack things a little bit, kind of be able to win those 50-50 balls and be a go-to guy in those situations. And just getting a little bit stronger, I think, would help him with that. And, that's what he's kind of working on right now. Shaheed was kind of – he didn't really open the door too much on kind of what he's looking to do. It was just kind of like, you know, enjoying some downtime right now, getting better at everything. So I think that he's just going to keep trying to build on everything he's doing. For AT, I think it's just – consistency, more reps. I really like the stuff we saw from him last year, and when he came on, he just took off kind of quickly. But I think it's just building on everything. But his starting point was so good, and that's not even just looking at it as a sixth round pick. I think just in general, he came out and quickly showed that he could be good at everything. And I think it's just getting, you know, more timing down with the quarterback. I would be interested to know what they're doing, if they're having an offseason camp or something. You know, typically that's something that you kind of see.
Carr brought him to Vegas last year, I think, after the last OTAs during that dead time. I'd like to be surprised if he does that again.
Yeah, like you know, Brady used to have like the Montana camp where they kind of like spent like the whole offseason. Like I would like to see or hear something about that. So it would be good if they're doing that. But I think it's just getting that timing down. And with him just kind of being more comfortable with everything he's doing. I was surprised at just kind of how quickly he picked everything up last year, though. Like he felt like, you know, someone that was confident kind of really quickly.
It feels like he belongs in that group. I mean, it's how he carries himself. It doesn't necessarily, you know, a lot of people have more confidence than they deserve to have, but he felt like he was part of that young trio. And it was funny. I'm picturing how well they all played together in the last home game, where they all had their highlights. They had their choreographed dance. Like we were interviewing A.T. Perry afterwards, and somebody said, "Oh, how have you three gotten along?" He goes, "Did you see that dance we put?" You know, he was like, he goes, "That there you go. That's us." You know, we know they spend time together off the field too. And I don't think it should be understated. I mean, look, Chris Olave got a lot of heat last year for when him and Derek Carr were not on the same page. We talked about it a lot. I think it was even a bigger problem for Rashid Shaheed. There was a lot of times that Houston lost where Rashid Shaheed was just not doing. There was a interception. I can't remember if it was a pick six, but a really costly interception in a home loss. Was that the Jaguars game or where Rashid Shaheed didn't quite finish the route the way Carr expected him to? I don't think it should be understated how well all those guys started to get on the same page in December. Carr's numbers went up. Carr's efficiencies went up. The interceptions went down. The receivers' numbers went up. And I think they're really hitting the ground running in year two.
It kind of stinks that there's so much just negativity engulfing everything because, like, these three guys, like, there is a lot to be excited about what they could do and where they could go. And you just mentioned at the end of the season, things really did turn, and it really did look different. And you can parse out however you want, opponents, whatever. Like, it was different. It was better. There was a lot there. It looked like it was building towards something. It's unfortunate that just kind of the way – that the whole season went as a whole and just kind of the reaction to it and just kind of the conversations, like, it's hard to see this thing that was really good and something that really should be a source of excitement. Like, if you're looking for things to be excited about, a team building, there's three really young receivers here that are really, really good, and they are building blocks to this team, but it's just kind of gets lost behind, like, all the, you know, just there's not a lot of light coming through the clouds right now, and it's too bad because these guys should be talked about in a way. And that should be kind of the thing that's leading the conversation. How do they build around him? How do they get better for him? But, you know, the season went out. It was a disappointing 9 wins. Now you don't have any tackles. It's just kind of hard to look at this when there's so much going on. But it really is something that I think that we should probably talk about more. And I think people in general should be significantly more excited about it. All right. Our next segment is brought to you by Jouer Productions. Make sure you check them out. If you want to record a podcast, get your sound right, get your visuals right, they'll get you right. They make everything look better. Make sure you check them out. That's Jouer.productions on the internet. Send them an email. They'll get you right. All right. We've covered a lot of drafts. We're getting old. It's been about 30 Saints drafts combined between us. The heavier side of that is on you than me. I'm just saying. But yeah, we've worked as rivals. We've worked together now. What is the draft choice that stands out to you the most that you nailed? Like, you're looking at the draft. You projected it. You wrote it. You said it. You felt great about it. What's the one that when you look back, you're like, damn, I was on it that year.
I took this question slightly different, but the answer is still the same. It was the one that when they made it, I was like, I thought they nailed it. But probably because I picked it, it was Brandon Cooks in 2014. I was at ESPN at the time, and they had all of us reporters get together for a mock draft, and I traded up from 27 to 19. I found a reporter, the Dolphins I traded with. I traded up for that mock draft, made a big spectacle of it. We had to tell the editors we made a trade and everything like that. Saints traded up from 27 to 20 to get Brandon Cooks. I was so close, but I'm taking full credit for that. But man, there's not a pick. There were some years where I think we all knew what they were going to do. Cedric Ellis in 2008, Malcolm Jenkins in 2009, Reggie Bush in 2006. There were a lot of years. Sheldon Rankins was another one that I feel like everyone knew this is their big hole. This is what they're going to do. Brandon Cooks is the one that absolutely, I was like, how can this guy not catch? I thought he was going to catch a lot of short passes from Drew Brees, do stuff after the catch. I remember doing a story that summer about how I thought he was going to win the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year. I thought 100 catches was possible. I thought he would just be this mega slot. He got there a little bit, but even with all the good things he did for the Saints and then eventually got traded for a first rounder, still going with a great career, I even expected more from him. But there is not a pick. When I look back all the way, this will be my 20th Saints draft. There's not a pick that I felt better about that they had nailed more than Brandon Cooks.
Hold up. We're going to have the Cooks conversation real quick. We're going to have the
Cooks conversation. Reggie Bush would have been an obvious answer. I thought he was going to do better too.
Hold on. I don't think Brandon Cooks has had a disappointing career. I think
he's not a disappointment, but I mean, I thought they had just drafted the next,
like Stephon Diggs or something.
I remember comparing him to Percy Harvin at the time. I thought they were going to use him in a way where it was going to be tons of catches, tons of yak. And he ended up being a little bit more like 70 catches for 1,100 yards. They were throwing deep to him a lot at the same time of Drew Brees' career where people were wondering about his deep arm strength. I expect him to be used differently more than I think he disappointed anyone.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that surprised me the most about Cooks when he was here, He was just so, like, rigid in the way he did that. It was so mechanical. Like, it was just so mechanical. Like, if you wanted him to go...
did nothing after the
catch. If you wanted him to go from, yeah, X, Y to Z, like, he was going to X, Y to Z exactly as it was drawn up on the page. But, like, there was no, you know, art to it. And they tried to use him on some of that stuff. And it was just, like, it was shocking to me because you go back and watch his college tapes and there was some creativity in some of the stuff he did. But he would get the ball on, like, a jet sweep and it was just, like, so... just he kind of ran, like... it was like light Taysom, you know what I mean? Like it was just kind of like he was just kind of going, and like yeah. Taysom's kind of the same way. Like he's gonna go and take off, and there's not a whole lot of like jiggle to it. Like I was shocked by that, but I think Cooks has had a good career though.
Oh, no question.
Yeah,
no question.
He definitely has. I mean, there's been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 thousand yard seasons. Like he's had some staying power too. I don't know how many times people get traded for first round picks, but he's probably leads the league in that right now too. So it's kind of wild to see it
even
like that.
Even Jalen Ramsey didn't get traded for a first the second time.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he didn't. Brandon Cooks said that's actually kind of crazy. Yeah, for me, I think the one that they nailed the most, and I think I nailed it the most as well, the Mike Thomas pick. Like that was one I took him in the first round. I took him in the first round in one of our mock drafts. I was tweeting that they should take him. I think they picked 12 that year. I was tweeting that they should take him at 12. Like
speaking of Sheldon Rankins, that was a Sheldon Rankins year.
Yeah, like just watching him, it was just, I don't know. It was so obvious to me that he was going to be great. Like if you looked at the numbers and the numbers weren't great, it was like 600 yards or whatever. And then like you watch and just the way they were using him, he looked like he was misused at Ohio State. I never believed in anyone that I've watched like more than that. And that was the guy that I was just like, man, they got to get him. I had no intel that they were going to draft him. I just felt so strongly about it that I ended up watching his whole entire college career that offseason. This is my first draft covering the Saints. Like, I didn't have any sources or anything at the time. But I was just like, this is the guy. Like, they have to draft him, and I'm going to be ready if they do. I had, like, the story written up. Like, they took him. That didn't go to waste. I just always, I don't know. He was just the one guy I watched. And I was like, everybody was on Treadwell. I was like, there is no way. Like, Treadwell is not the guy. Like it has to be Mike Thomas, and they got Mike in the second round, and I think that's probably one of the best picks. You can say what you want about the second contract, the pick itself, I think is one of the best picks I ever made.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, no question. Little known story, the Saints liked that article so much that they just started, you know, like asking you to make their picks for him ever since.
No. Yeah, that was definitely one there. I mean, there's been a few that I think they've absolutely nailed. I mean, it didn't last long, but I think the value they got out of, like, it's weird to say this, but I think the value they got out of C.J. Gardner-Johnson's one that was fourth round, like, and he got multiple years out of him.
Is a long list. Picks they've nailed, but I'm just talking about the ones that right in the moment we were like, oh, they nailed that one.
Oh, yeah.
Even Alvin Kamara, I think we both loved the Alvin Kamara pick at the time and thought, he's going to be really fun in this offense, but we didn't know for sure.
Yeah, I was writing the whole offseason that they desperately needed the satellite back. Like yeah, they needed it to open up their offense. And he was so much more than that. But
he was more than we thought. Yeah, but yeah, that's one that stands out as a, well, this is a perfect fit. I mean, if we were doing this with free agents, our answer would both be C.J. Spiller, and we would have got that one wrong. God.
Yeah, same idea, wrong guy. They just got it right a year later with Alvin. I thought they nailed the Marshawn pick until we found out what they missed on.
Of course. I mean, Marshawn is probably the one that analysts, fans, everything were most excited about because back to what we talked about at the top of the show, everyone had Marshawn in their top five that year, and the Saints got him at 11. It was like that never happens. Like, like even the Saints said all their own internal mock drafts had him going by 5 or 6 at the latest. They didn't expect that to even be a conversation in their room. So that was the I can't believe the guy was there at 11 guy, and he's had an incredible career, and it was the worst pick they've ever made.
All right, let's move on to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to hand-picked select bourbon, whiskeys, and so much more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. This question is from Marlon. How many years away are the Saints from being able to theoretically facilitate a trade for a top QB prospect like Minnesota seems to be doing, where the team can be able to support the QB with the pieces it already has in place?
I love this question because it really makes me think, when is the right time to do it? We just talked about, and just to be clear, if there's anyone listening who thinks we think Marshawn is a bad pick for any other reason, it was because that was the year that they were strongly considering Patrick Mahomes. They should have just traded up for Mahomes instead because he's maybe one of the greatest player of all time. Otherwise, Marshawn's a great pick. But even that year, the Saints were a little torn. Like, Drew Brees still had good years left in him. Is it too early to take a quarterback? Is that not the right year? Is it not the right year when you have the 15th pick and you have to trade up to fourth? The San Francisco 49ers tried that with Trey Lance. Is it only the right year when you hit rock bottom? We saw it work a couple times, I guess, when the Rams traded up for Jared Goff when they were already a ready team. Like, when is it the right time? Does it all have to fall apart? Do you have to have no answer at quarterback? Or should you be like the Detroit Lions right now and they're like, we have a dynasty on our hands, possibly, if we get our hands on Drake May? Like, I don't know. It never feels like the right time. You have to blow everything up to take a quarterback because now you can't get your left tackle and you can't get your defensive end. I think it could be this year. Why not? Like, I mean, if they wanted to, it's hard to do it from the 14th pick. They don't have any ammo. I don't even know if there's a team who would take their call right now. What could they even offer? But I think for the Saints, the time is now or next year or the year after. We're in that time now.
For me, it's not even necessarily a roster question. I think if you make that move up for the rookie quarterback, the thing that I would want to see to be in place, and again, you can manipulate it however you want, but I would want them to be able to manipulate it to the full extent to not cover up bad debt. Like, I would just want the cap to be cleaner so that if you do draft CJ Stroud, you can go all in around them and you can maximize
like Texans are doing right
you
now.
You can maximize every single dollar and you build the team around the rookie contract, and you can take full advantage of that. But if you do it now, you have bad money on the books. You're trying to cover up for things. And if you do start stretching those dollars, I want you stretching from zero so you're getting max value out of them instead of like, all right, we're getting back even to what it should be. So that would be the only thing for me, because if they traded for him now, it would be like 2 years from now before they got in that situation where they're kind of on the other side of some of this stuff and you're wasting time at that point. So But in general, I think the best time to do it is when the opportunity presents itself, because if you're waiting for the moment, like, you know, as you're waiting and planning your future, life is happening and you just bypass things kind of waiting for this perfect moment. And I just don't think that's how it works. I think when opportunity is there, I don't care who's on your team, what roster you have. If you're the Patriots and you're picking third in the draft and Jaden Daniels is there and that's who you want, you don't say, well, damn it, we don't have the roster for him, so we're going to bypass
this.
Here's
what's interesting
because
about
you might not
question,
be back
though.
There.
I think it's about the guy more than it's about the moment. I mean, Mahomes' example is the ultimate example. They should have done it because they believed in that guy. You might go 6 years before you find a guy that you like that much, and that guy might be going first. But what is interesting is how we just talk about teams differently. We are watching all these reports of Minnesota and Denver being the two teams most likely to trade up for J.J. McCarthy, and we're dismissing that as even a possibility for the Saints because J.J. McCarthy just doesn't feel like the guy
right. That's
worth it to me. Like, so what makes Minnesota and Denver teams that it's worth it for them and the Saints a team that it's not worth it for them, just that they already have so much invested in the position? You have to have the vacancy to trade up for a McCarthy-level quarterback, I guess?
Yeah, see, like, that isn't a move that I would want to make. Like, it's just not something that – so go ahead and do it. Like, I'm not jealous of that. I'm not jealous of a team that can go get J.J. McCarthy. Maybe he ends up being great, but, like, I'm not convinced by it. But if you're going to go for it – I guess the point – my only thing here is that I just think – when you can do it, you do it. And if it's for the right guy, you do it. Like, that's
it. Got to be about the guy.
Yeah, I don't think you just go do it to do it. And it's just like, we're going to go all in on J.J. McCarthy because we can get from 12 to 7. Okay, but, like, is he the right guy? Yep. That's what it has to be. Like, the problem for me with, like, the Mahomes example is that they believe them and then go get him. Like, that's the issue. So if you can go get him, go get him. And it's the right guy, do it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think you wait for the perfect – like, our roster's in the perfect place. Now we can go get the quarterback. It has to be like, we love the quarterback and the opportunity's there, so go do it.
If they loved a Mahomes-level player this year, they would go get him this year. I do not think they're ruling it out. I think the circumstances make me predict they're not going to get a quarterback this year, because I think the three most surefire guys are going to go 1, 2, and 3. And I doubt that they love someone else as much as they love Mahomes. But if they had a Mahomes-level grade on Nix or Penix or McCarthy, now is the time. Yeah. If you have that level grade on a guy.
It's like just like a lot like life. Like, you can't, I'm going to get the perfect job and the perfect house and the perfect marriage and the perfect retirement plan and the perfect, like, it just doesn't work out like that. Like, at some point, you have to see the right opportunity and the right player, and you have to be willing to say, F it. And it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be the perfect time. Because, look, if you're close enough to to move up to get someone, like, you have flaws. Like, it's just never going to be. Houston wasn't in a perfect situation to have C.J. Stroud. Like, they yeah. got him. They figured out their offensive line was not good last year. And yep. they found a way to make it work. They got better. They went out and they got better players. And they're going for it. So, it's just, if you can get the quarterback, you get the quarterback. Because it's just so hard to get the quarterback. Yep. So, that's just kind of the way it should work out. But, yeah, I don't know if we're. If we're talking about ideal situations, though, I don't think the Saints are in one. But if the right guy's there to present
yeah, if
himself,
they got
go
to
do
pick
it.
Their moment, yeah. they would play out Derek Carr's contract, and the very next year they would do this. And nothing would help cap. The yeah. cap more than finally having a rookie. I mean, everyone talks about the Saints' cap issues, but one of the things is they have been paying at least $20 million for a quarterback for most of the last 15 years. And these teams that – rookie quarterbacks are a cheat code in more ways than one.
They absolutely are. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for checking out the show. If you aren't signed up to the website yet, make sure you do that. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. Our mock draft is going up tomorrow on Thursday afternoon. Make sure you check that out. And until next time, we'll see you then.